Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, I've been looking forward to this conversation all day long, really all week long.
Me too.
But I'm glad that it's finally here today on this Thursday. You have a piece out at theathletic.com after spending some time around many people in the Tennessee football program. And I think I'll start it with this, which I think you've laid out really well in this article that I'm like halfway through reading. The Tennessee Volunteers have been able to accomplish something. And I think this part of it's inarguable. They have been able to accomplish something heading into this season that is really, really difficult to do in the landscape of college football in today's world. And that is, they actually have a quarterback room. Like a quarterback room where there is one known commodity and there's at least another guy that you feel like if he has to go play in a game, you're not just totally panicking out there. And they've accomplished that with Hendon Hooker, obviously, as the starter and our quickly becoming most discussed person on the show, Joe Milton, as the backup. And you've put together a very nice piece at The Athletic where Josh Heupel is involved in this. Alex Golish is involved in this. Hendon Hooker is involved in this. You've done a lot of digging into the quarterback room at Tennessee, what it looks like now, and what it can ultimately look like heading in next season as well. So explain to us what you've put together here on theathletic.com.
Well, I think some people who have been hearing us talk the Joe Milton discussion would probably say, gosh, all that talk, and then you decide you're going to go out and just write about it too, like Joe Milton Heisman in 2023. But here's the reality of this situation. The idea for this story hit me with a quote that hit me in the face, which is in this story from Alex Golish several weeks ago when I was interviewing him for a State of the Program, like annual, you know, State of the Program piece that we do on a lot of college football teams. And let me just find that quote. Did I just X out of this story? Gosh, unbelievable! I should be reading this. Yeah. Well, so the Golish here, I got it. You know, the thing about Golish, I mean, he is enthusiastic. Okay, but you know, he was also super enthusiastic in that piece, State of the Program, about Squirrel White, and you're kind of seeing it now on the field. So here's just part of the quote about Joe Milton from Alex Golish. Joe's incredibly smart, incredibly talented, supremely talented, like as talented a quarterback as I've ever seen. It didn't go his way at the beginning of the last season. You try to find a solution to it, and trust me, we have. It comes down to mental toughness, confidence in your ability. That's Milton hanging in. But and there's already comments on the story, and I totally get it. Like, great. Talk about how great he is. Well, I'm sure he's amazing in practice. But come on. Like, we've seen him play. But I think the biggest thing people confuse with Milton, and again, I mean, the bigger story right now is Hendon Hooker. I mean, you know, he's, I think, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. But I also think the Milton Hooker thing, like you said, quarterback room, very rare anymore. To be able to get experienced quality to back up a clear starter. It's incredible, but it's just how it is. But also, you know, with Milton, I think people miss the boat on football IQ. That's where there's the biggest difference inside the program and outside the program. And I don't think I understand the last play against Ole Miss. There's no excuse. It's bad. Like, you got to know how much time's on the clock and that the ball has to go in the end zone. You have to. That said, football IQ was not what was lacking for him when he played. I don't think so at all. And
he ran the offense really well.
Yes, he found people, especially he had a little bit of the Bowling Green game kind of went sideways. But I thought in the Pitt game, he did a lot of good things. He went to the right spots over and over and over again. He kept overthrowing them. So, look, we'll see. But, man, he is beloved in that program. So it's not just, like, the coaches and stuff, and it's not just that he and Hendon Hooker are best friends and roommates. I mean, he's, like, if you don't leaders on this team, I would say it's Hendon Hooker, it's Trevon Flowers, and then it's Joe Milton. And how often can you say that about a football team, that your backup quarterback is in that top leadership group? But that is the case here with the Vols.
Well, I'll say this, and, you know, we've joked about Joe Milton a lot, and I still have my doubts as to whether or not he's going to be the starter next year and if he's ever going to be able to put it together. Because at some point on the field, you just kind of are what you are, and he's been that for the first 2 years. So we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting to follow. I will say this. I thought he was incredibly impressive the other day in the media day interviews of why he chose to stay at Tennessee, particularly in today's landscape of college football, where at the first sign of trouble, a lot of guys are just out, and it doesn't matter what it is. They're out. They're going somewhere where they can play. You know, I know that Joe Milton has already transferred once, so that does complicate this a little bit. But the fact that he is hanging around and basically accepting that he's not going to play this year unless it's in mop-up duty or unless Hendon Hooker gets hurt, that he's already like aiming for 2023 to be the starter. I thought the way that he handled that was pretty impressive given what today's landscape of college football is like. You just don't see this happen anymore in college football.
Well, that's another thing that struck me here. And because, look, how much have we talked in the last couple of years about players being able to monetize off their value and players being able to have freedom of movement? Their coaches go whenever they want. They can't go. Now they've got more freedom of movement, all that stuff. And that's valued. It's important. But it doesn't mean that sticking with something isn't valued, including by other players. So here's a quote from Tavon Flowers on Milton staying. Quote, "You don't see that. It's amazing. It shows his character, shows what type of person he is, shows how dedicated he is. He's not going to give up easily on anything. You can just tell he's hungry. He's ready to work. Not worried about what might happen. He's not worried about what the outsiders are saying." End quote. So as much as I think players want that freedom, of course, and a lot of players are taking advantage, I think like it's still valued within a program when someone, you know, opts to stay. You know, there's something to be said for that. And I just think, look, if you – this kind of goes bigger picture with Tennessee, like, you know, I think you got to look at Heupel some too with some credit on this. Right? Like, yeah. You have to have a place that people want to stay and play at. And I think he's created that, the culture. And I think that it's a good thing for a football team to have guys who do that and hang in there and persevere.
I'll say this, and I was going to go there with Heupel anyway, but since you brought it up, the one thing that we've talked about, and this is not just a Heupel thing, this has been Tennessee for a while, is quarterbacks. Like, you've got to find quarterbacks. And in a world where it's so hard to keep multiple quarterbacks now, I think this is a pretty good commentary on Josh Heupel, that you've got Hendon Hooker, which you feel great about as a starter. Now, by the way, Taven Jackson's come in. We'll see what he looks like. I feel like everybody just kind of dismisses Taven Jackson now too.
Yeah.
Exactly. But Joe Milton has elected to hang around, and you got Nico coming in. Like, the ability to – number one, recruit, number two, retain, and number three, develop quarterbacks, that is ultimately, to me, Joe, going to be what really tells the story of Josh Heupel's tenure at Tennessee. And so far, if you're a Tennessee fan, with the way the quarterback room has been handled, I think you got to be pretty excited. That to me has been maybe the number one strength of Josh Heupel thus far.
Well, I agree. And look, moving forward, as you want to take a jump as a program and start mixing it up with the big boys, you know, you're going to need someone like Nico Iamaliava to come in and accelerate things and take it to another level. Maybe, you know, I agree with you, like on Milton, he's got to do it. You know, you got to do it on the field. But I think this is at least a transition to that potentially. At some point though, like, you know, you need him to work out or someone to work out. You got to recruit an elite guy every year, but it's hard, you know, when you, like, it's hard to follow up Nico. Well, it'll be interesting, you know, and then it's hard to keep guys together. This is just a moment in time when they have an actual quarterback room. And look, you don't want it to be a factor, but Hendon Hooker does like to run, and sometimes I think he's got to get better this year at sliding.
Yeah,
I mean, there's an injury risk there. There just is. No JC in Goodlettsville. Joe Milton does not have nude photos on me. And no, I am not his agent. Again, you can laugh at me if you want, and that's fine. But you're laughing at a whole bunch of people in Knoxville too. And that's why I wrote this, and we've been talking about this. I'm like, man, they really love this dude. Like, still, after everything, they are big on this guy. And I know Hooker is like his best friend, so you take that with a grain of salt. But, I mean, Hooker's talking about him being the best player in college football next season. So, you know, again, grain of salt, best friends. But I don't think you just dismiss this either.
I'm just saying, everything about this at the moment reminds me of Nick Westbrook Akina from the standpoint of you talking about it all the time, writing about it, the excitement that the Titans had for him, that the Vols have for Melton. And ultimately, I mean, you were kind of right about Nick Westbrook Akina. I'll just leave it at that.
And again, it wasn't me. It was because I heard that from someone I trust in the organization, right? So I'm just saying, I'm just relaying information. Don't kill the messenger.
You're just reporting.
You know. By the way, Joe Milton, if he continues to go along here, probably ought to consider making Hendon Hooker his agent with how Hendon Hooker is talking him up. I will say that.
Yeah, that's some lofty talk. Like I wrote in the story, like, outside the program, a mistake of 2021. Inside the program, a Heisman in 2023. That's yes. The difference of Joe Milton, inside and outside the program.
Just a slight difference there. We'll continue the conversation on the Vols. What have we learned about this Vols team so far during fall camp? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 5:35 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds are on the road facing the Norfolk Tides, the AAA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrow, here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrow, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe Rexrow live on his way to Titans training camp. We'll also catch up with him as he gets to training camp a little bit later today. But, Joe, we did have Madison Hawk on earlier from WBIR in Knoxville with her thoughts on the Vols thus far. From your day up in Knoxville and from what we've seen thus far with Tennessee, what has stood out to you during the early days of fall camp so far with Josh Heupel and company up there in Knoxville?
Well, unfortunately, it sounds like basically like the impressions are going to be confined to like day one. You know,
sounds like it.
Here's a couple team periods, and now you're welcome to come out and watch a little stretching and maybe a little catch. Play a little catch, and then you're out of there. I mean, that's just, again, that's kind of standard operating procedure in college football anymore, unfortunately. But, look, I have concerns for sure about the defense. And obviously you're talking first day, you're talking helmets and shorts, and you're seeing the skill. It's undeniable. I would say, I said it the other day, but Squirrel White, Brew McCoy, even like it's worth keeping Ramel Keaton in mind. I mean, the guy has played some snaps. It's good to have a guy like that. I don't know that I buy that he'll be in that starting lineup from the start, but still, it's good to have a veteran like that who can give you some football. I mean, the thing that stood out is that there's a lot of ability there. The quarterbacks look great, and there is at least competition, at corner. So a newcomer, at least one newcomer, I feel like is going to emerge. Maybe it's Turrentine, the Ohio State transfer. Maybe it's Walker, the Georgia Tech transfer. I like Turrentine probably as much as I like anybody out there in that brief glimpse. Christian Charles, certainly someone to keep in mind as well, true sophomore. They need at least one of those guys to emerge. That would definitely make me feel better about the defense. If they can get consistent play, at that spot, there's still so much to find out, I think, about the front. Madison brought up Tyler Barron and Byron Young, and I think both of them could be excellent this year. They need to find depth behind them, too. They need to find more options there. And I'm still not – I like some of the young talent up front, but, man, they lost some old talent that played its best football last year under Heupel, and that's something to watch too. But Rodney Gardner is probably as good an assistant coach as they have, so that's the encouraging part of that position.
There was some news on the Tennessee front yesterday. Lynn J. Dixon, who was a Clemson running back for the past 4 years, he actually transferred to West Virginia and never set foot at West Virginia and transferred again. So now is at Tennessee. He ran for 1,420 yards in four seasons. He actually was originally committed to Tennessee back in 2017 and then decommitted and ended up in Clemson. But Lynn J. Dixon, now part of the running back committee, and Adam Sparks put out a photo earlier of him on the field with Heupel, and Heupel kind of showing him where to go. So he's there. He's on the field. What does that mean for you in terms of the running back group and where exactly he slots in?
Well, it's definitely good for them to have that depth. I think they're fine now. You know, it's good to have someone who's played, you know, who can be a part of the solution there. I don't know how he's going to, you know, like you said, when you have a guy like that who goes to a place and then he decides, tells me that he's expecting to have a role, and maybe he will, but I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't call that a slam dunk either. You know, it's these freshmen, I think, are really gifted, and a lot of it is, you know, how quickly can they pick things up? Usually with freshmen, one of the big things that you see rough early is pass protection. And I don't know how good Dixon is in that way, but usually when you have a guy who's had logged some years in a good program, he's probably going to be more advanced in that way. But it's important to have, you know, as much depth as possible. Jabari Small, I think, could have a huge year. I like him a lot. He wasn't as explosive as Tyon Evans last year, but boy, he was awfully good. And I think he is primed for a really big year and to be, you know, to be the primary back and then some. I mean, I think a lot of usage for him catching and running the ball. But you got to have that depth. And I still think, again, from my little glimpse, like Dylan Sampson, I think they're going to find ways to get him out there and get him the ball in space because he is electric as an athlete for sure.
Well, and then there's Jalen Wright as well, who, you know, in his moments last year, but all of a sudden with Lynn J. Dixon coming in, like, I think you were concerned about depth at running back maybe a few days ago when it was announced that Whitehead was going to be out for an extended period of time, but I think you're starting to feel better about that now. So, I mean, offensively, I feel okay about wide receiver. Obviously, I feel good about quarterback. I feel okay about running back. You know, the offensive line, I think, will be solid, especially with their starters. So I think there's a lot to like offensively, but to your point, defensively, that's where the big questions are going to come in. What did you make of what Madison Hawk said earlier on the show about Jalen Hyatt? Obviously, he's tried to get bigger. You know, that's something that's going to be a continual work in progress, but – do you feel like maybe a Squirrel Wider or other receivers in that room, Jimmy Callaway, can they challenge Jalen Hyatt as the year one and as the year goes on? And if so, what does that mean for Tennessee?
I do think that Jimmy Callaway probably isn't being discussed enough. Going back to the Joe Milton interview, you know, he mentioned Hyatt and Callaway together as the two guys who just worked their butts off. You know, season, and we've seen some good things from Callaway. I mean, I think he's got some real good playmaking ability. So I think he probably doesn't get talked about enough. I agree with Madison on Hyatt. I mean, he still looks like, I mean, he looks wiry. You can tell he's added some weight, but he's still very skinny. Now, he's not as skinny as Squirrel White. And, you know, that's still one of those things, like, you get into the SEC and, man, you need to have everything, including the ability to take hits. But it's not like, we haven't seen other skinny receivers in the SEC do well in recent years, you know, as well. So, I mean, I do think that Squirrel White's going to have some kind of role. And just all the stuff about his maturity, his toughness, ability to pick things up, all that stuff, it bodes well for him. Yeah, I think they're going to be fine there. I mean, left tackle is really on offense. That's my biggest question. And again, when you get into those games against, you know, teams with pros all over their defensive front, are they gonna have a good enough option there? That's big. If they're okay there, if they shore that up, and, you know, even if you have to give help more to that side, if Darnell Wright's really good at right tackle, then I think you're fine. But that's something the Bears watching.
Joe Rexroad on his way to Titans training camp. Our training camp coverage presented by USA Hemp Store and Parman Energy, your one-stop petroleum solution. Coming up next, you'll hear a conversation with Jared Stillman. We'll get his thoughts on a myriad of Titans issues, some of which Joe Rexroad found to be quite amusing. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend, Jared Stillman from Stillman & Company. Jared, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you guys for having me. It's such an honor and a pleasure.
I'm sure that it is. I will give you this opportunity to gloat for your victory yesterday in Jared versus Joe. The floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this has been a long time coming. I think that it was nice to have the judge with some sense this time. And I thought that the ruling was fair and final. And like the NFLPA and Deshaun Watson's camp, I vow to not appeal the ruling from the judge, and I would hope that Joe would do the same.
First of all, you make Ian last week go find audio of people talking about interceptions after we talked about interceptions, and the poor guy still gifts you the victory. I don't know, man. I feel for Ian. I feel for Ian.
Do you know how hard that was for Ian to do?
But it was still stupid to even ask him to do it.
Ian goes into the soundbites folder to last year, to August, puts in the word interceptions, and then puts just all the clips over into one file. It probably took, if I had to guess, A minute.
Okay, we're going to ask Ian that. A minute. Yeah, Michelle is shaking her head. Furiously. I totally agree. That's fine. Well, I'm a little bit mad at Ian for gifting you that victory, but I still feel for him.
So Jared, I love Michelle, but Michelle doesn't have the wizardry tactician skills over the years that Ian has developed. It's like the difference between being a veteran and, a couple of years in the league. That Michelle's a couple years in the league. She's getting there. But Ian is like that blackjack dealer that can deal out the cards faster than anybody else. And so, trust me, that did not take him long. To disprove your take last week that there was no coverage of Tannehill's interceptions in training camp.
No, coverage that he had a terrible camp. Again, you didn't even listen when you started to do this stupid crap. Listen to what the words are being – listen to the words, Jared. I said we talked about the interceptions. And then you're like, hey, go find interceptions. We talked about the interceptions. We talked about that. You don't listen. Go ahead, Robbie. Sorry.
Jared, I do want to get your thoughts on Malik Willis and what you've seen thus far during camp. What have been your impressions, and what does, I guess, what you've seen of him so far make you think of what he could be as he moves forward here?
Well, right now he stinks. I mean, there's no way around that. Now, I don't know this, and I actually said this the other day, take Les Steckel, for instance. And this is the one part where I don't love the fact that Les Steckel's kid is coaching on the Titans staff because, then Les kind of has to keep it to the vest. But I would love to have Les Steckel watch Malik, or after the first preseason game, and I would love to ask Malik or Les Steckel about what he sees in Malik, because Les Steckel was the quarterback coach when Steve McNair came in, and when Steve McNair came in, they said, hey, 2 years. McNair will not be ready for 2 years, and they told the media that, and they told the fans that, and they took him with the third overall pick, not in the third round. I don't know if this is where Malik is supposed to be. Like, if this is where a third-round quarterback who's got potential, and Malik's got a strong arm, and it, by all accounts, it sounds like Malik is a smart kid and a good kid, and I think those are important. But on the actual field, Malik stinks. And this is not, I feel like, hyperbole to say that Malik has been way, way, way worse than Logan Woodside. And Logan Woodside has not been pretty out there at training camp. Every training camp, I feel like that I stand there on the sidelines, I keep wondering why Logan Woodside's on the team. And then they bring somebody in there to beat him out, and they never do. So this training camp, somebody texted the text line the other day and asked, who's the best option at quarterback after what you've seen at training camp? And I'm like, Tannehill. Like, and I think that's like the least controversial take of all time. Maybe Malik stinks, or maybe this is just the process. I don't know, but for right now, I mean, he can't play in an NFL game. If what happened to Tony Romo and Kellen Moore 6 years ago or whatever, where Moore broke his leg in practice and Romo broke his collarbone in a preseason game, and Dak Prescott, the third-string quarterback, started for the Cowboys and took that job and never gave it back, if that situation happened here, the Titans would go out and get another Shanahan system quarterback to either back up Tannehill or, if that happened, to then play over Malik.
Yeah, but are you surprised by what you've seen? This is a guy who, the word was, you can see the talent, you can also see tremendous inconsistency, and he went in the third round. I mean, I don't watch Malik Willis daily and think, oh, man, this is way worse than I expected. Is that the case for you?
I'm not going to have a heart attack over the idea that Malik Willis, you know, looks the way he looks. That's why I'm asking. Like, I don't know if this is natural. I don't know if this is what it was supposed to be. I certainly didn't think Malik Willis was going to come in here and start. And, I mean, look at the other quarterbacks, too. Kenny Pickett was a first-round quarterback. And because of that, and because of Kenny Pickett's age, I kind of assumed that Kenny Pickett was going to be the starter in Pittsburgh. And he's not. Mitchell Trubisky is going to win that job. And I think Mason Rudolph might be the backup in Pittsburgh this season, and Pickett would be the third stringer. And that, I think, is alarming. That is eye-opening of, wow. I mean, those draft gurus said this quarterback class sucks, but, I mean, they're not lying here. And Matt Corral, they've already traded for Baker Mayfield over Matt Corral in Carolina. Desmond Ritter's not going to be the quarterback there. Arthur Smith in the first week announced that Mariota was the starter.
Well, that's a no-brainer. Come on.
I mean, I don't know. Like, Marcus, whatever.
That was just a joke. Keep going.
But,
yeah, he's skipping rocks.
I guess for me, like, just because the expectations were low doesn't mean that, and I'm just not a quarterback guru to sit there and say, okay, that throw that he threw that was 8 feet behind Cody Hollister and would get him killed, that is going to, by next year, be a beautiful, on-the-line, crisp pass right into the hands of Treylon Burks. I just don't know that.
Jared Stillman on with us here on Robbie and Rex Show. So, Jared, I want to throw this question out to you that we discussed yesterday. What, in your mind, does Derrick Henry have to prove this year? And we kind of took this discussion yesterday in terms of his path to the Hall of Fame. Well, how would you go about answering that question?
You know, I don't know why I felt so bad for Derrick Henry when he got hurt, because the individual award stuff, I never get too excited about. You know, the campaigns that the Predators have for Roman Josi to win the Norris Trophy, I don't care about. Mike Vrabel winning Coach of the Year, I don't care about. And I don't know why I don't care about it. I don't care who on the Titans makes the Pro Bowl. But as a kid, I always used to care about, you know, who would make the Pro Bowl or who on the Braves would go to the All-Star game. And I don't know, maybe I just am not fun anymore. I don't know. But with Derrick Henry, when he got hurt, and I was listening to this show on my drive back from the World Series with my dad, and Robbie, you said it right there, we got breaking news, and I'm thinking, okay, what's this? And then you said Derrick Henry broken foot, and I immediately sat up like, oh, no. And the oh, no was probably for the Titans, but also for Derrick, because I felt like it was all in front of him. I thought he was going to get his third consecutive rushing title. I know there's a pretty good chance he was going to run for 2,000 yards. This team had basically locked up the division the day before. I mean, I thought that that was going to be Derrick Henry's ticket to Canton. You win three straight rushing titles and a 2,000-yard seasons, and you're in my opinion. And so I felt so bad for Derrick because it was so close and it wasn't his fault. I would agree with you guys that, like, if Derrick goes back to being Derrick Henry and wins a third rushing title, I still don't know if that gets him into the Hall of Fame. Certainly a second 2,000-yard season would. I think for this Titans team, what I look at is the changes that they really made. Now, don't get me started on the offensive line because they did nothing there, and I think it's going to bite them in the butt like tight end did last year. But the changes that they made, in my opinion, was to be less top-heavy offensively, where it was all designed for Derrick and AJ, and the ball had to go to those two guys. And I think there's going to be more spreading of the football around, kind of similar to 2020. Now, Derrick's still going to get the football like Derrick Henry should. But I think what that might do is it honestly might make it easier for the team to win big games, which is what they need, and it'll certainly probably take some stress off of Tannehill. If Derrick Henry can carry this team to the Super Bowl, I think that that also gets him in the Hall of Fame. So I think Derrick, like a 2,000-yard season gets him in, or a Super Bowl. But those are two pretty large extremes. But given his age and his lack of total yardage, like Eric Dickerson or O.J. Simpson or those kind of guys, I think Derrick would need one of those two extremes to get in.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, I mean, I think that if he wins another rushing title, comes back from this, gets over 10,000, which he certainly can do, he's also going to be judged. That's what's hard about these things. You're also judged against your peers in your era as well, right? So if you are the best of the best at your spot for a 5-year period or something like that, it's pretty compelling. But we'll see. I did want to ask you, Jared, a player in camp so far who has stood out to you who you didn't anticipate standing out?
I mean, can I say Roger McCreary? Because I think it's pretty cut and dry. But he was the second round pick, and I didn't really know anything about him. So is McCreary fair or not?
That's fine. I'm looking for a little bit more of a deep cut, but McCreary is he's playing well.
So I would say Racy McMath has been a guy who I really didn't have high hopes for. I thought McMath kind of screwed his chance last year in the Pittsburgh game when he fumbled the football in a spot where the Titans really needed him to not fumble the football. And I always looked at McMath as, you know, he's a big built guy, but he's not super tall, and he's got good speed, but it's that straight line speed. It's not, you know, I'm not sure that McMath is a burner at wide receiver like Chris Sanders. And all of a sudden, there have been a bunch of catches he's made, whether it's in one-on-ones or whether it's in, you know, 7-on-7, where I see him make a play, and now I don't even look down and think about who number 13 is. I'm like, oh, good catch by McMath, and he's made a bunch of catches. And I think I said to you, Joe, the other day at practice, that I felt like McMath had kind of, right now, Treylon Burks is going to make the team, Robert Woods is going to make the team, and Nick Westbrook-Akeem is going to make the team, and then everybody else is fighting for positioning or spots. I think McMath might be the most solid number 4 because of the special teams element that he gives this team. And so, to me, I didn't go into camp thinking that Racy McMath had a spot in this team. And right now, while I wouldn't say he's a lock, and I think he'll play in the preseason games, I would say that I feel pretty comfortable Racy McMath's going to make this football team.
I've got a text I want to read on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. It says, for the first time since I've been listening to this radio station, Jared Stillman is actually being nice and not yelling. It's truly magical. I like him much better like this. Y'all need to have him on every morning. Jared, have we been some sort of calming influence on you this morning?
Well, you can ask Michelle how I felt when her and I connected here to chat with you guys. Michelle thought I was crying.
I was like, Jared, are you crying?
I was like, no, I'm tired. I just woke up. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe I'm like one of those children, like it takes me a little while to get going and I get wound up like a toy. But I'm in a bad mood today, and maybe this has just made me feel so much better.
What are you in a bad mood for? Yeah.
Well, so I have to miss practice today. Caroline's going to go and take all the notes and have all the hot takes. I have to miss practice today because I have a FedEx package that's arriving, and I have to be here within a 5-hour window. And if I'm not here within the 5-hour window, they won't take it to the FedEx location and drop it off and then let me go pick it up. They'll try to deliver it again tomorrow. And
what is it, a ladder?
No. And then I called FedEx, and I was like, hey, can you just leave it at the FedEx drop-off location that's literally like a block up from my house? No. We need you there to sign for the package. So I will be at home. If somebody wants to try to rob me, the time between 8 a.m. and 12:55 would not be a good time because I will most certainly be here. Right. As I await FedEx's package and FedEx's strict rules, apparently. I mean, I'm probably one more FedEx problem away from calling Arthur Smith and saying, Coach, I mean, I can't miss practice. But apparently I'll be missing practice today. So they don't need to get married, so then I don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. And, you know, somebody else could do that. Or at least it could be a system where if somebody else needed me to wait for a FedEx package, I could wait for their FedEx package. Or maybe I'll just, next time I buy things, say, if you ship with FedEx, I'm out.
It sounds like a Jared Stillman version of the Rex rant. Jared, great stuff. Appreciate you. Have fun at home waiting on FedEx, and we'll hear from you at 2 o'clock.
Joe, I'll need a full report from practice.
I got you. Yeah, I'll send you some video.
See you guys.
Jared Stillman, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Something interesting he hit on that I want to get Joe's thoughts on coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We catch up with Joe Rexroad out live at Titans training camp. Our training camp coverage presented by USA Hemp Store and Parman Energy, your one-stop petroleum solution. Joe, what's going on? How's training camp so far?
As you asked me that question, who's flying into the screen with a big catch? Nick Westbrook-Ikhina.
Oh, beautiful.
How about that? So far it's just some individual drills. I'm here at the 1025 headquarters here, and still waiting for the team stuff to get going. But they are not today in full pads. They are back in the shorts. So Vrabel, you know, taking it easy. A day off yesterday, now shorts today. So he's being very judicious with the pad popping.
Now it is a little bit of an interesting day out there from this standpoint. No Elijah Molden again. No Jeffrey Simmons, no Ben Jones, no Taylor Lewan, and no Danico Autry. This all according to John Glennon on Twitter. But also, no Bud Dupree, apparently, for the second practice day in a row. So, I guess, Joe, that signals to me that maybe there's something going on with Bud Dupree if it's two practice days in a row.
Yep. I would agree with that. It's not out of the realm of possibility that that could be the plan, but it's kind of unlikely in my mind that they would want to go two, especially when you have an off day in between them, right? So the fact that you had a day off and then you have an off day, I don't see why it would be a voluntary sit-down for him. So that's something to watch for sure. I'm sure some of those are planned, you know, maybe like the Lewan one. I mean, I didn't see anything with him. Like I said earlier on the show, I mean, Autry has kind of, you know, hobbled off here and there through camp, so You figure at this time, you know, the injuries start to mount a little bit. You look around the league, how many guys have already been lost for the season because of ACL injuries? Patrick from Denver the other day, which is awful. So, you know, Titans have been lucky, but starting to get into the reality of the dog days now.
No question about it. So to that point, we talked about this a little bit earlier. As camp continues to go on here, and, you know, you got the preseason game coming up next week. By the way, football returning tonight, the Hall of Fame game. Get excited.
Oh, yeah.
What are you looking forward to as training camp has kind of graduated into this stage? And I think the phrase you used earlier, coming down the home stretch of the training camp discovery part of it. What are you looking for now as training camp has gotten pretty deep into it?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like, well, I mean, gosh, I don't mean to, like, diminish our own value, but, you know, you can be the eyes and the ears of fans before you start getting preseason games. Now, granted, a lot of guys aren't playing in those preseason games anymore anyway, so it's not like they're as telling as they used to be. But still, everybody's going to get to watch Malik Willis play, you know, probably in a half a football game. And still quite a few of these guys who are important. I still think a lot of these guys up front are going to play a lot, you know, in at least a couple of these preseason games, probably, you know, the first two. So, you know, it's focused on the trenches. We're seeing, you know, we're seeing if these receivers can keep playing well, and Tannehill continues to not throw picks. So, I mean, I don't know. Are we creeping into 2023 MVP also? Is it going to be a back-to-back? I don't know. I can't prove that it won't be back-to-back MVPs for him based on his training camp performance. But in all seriousness, the trenches, are there battles on the offensive line? I'm going to continue to say Chigakonkwo, you know, how does he develop as a blocker so that he can have a big role this year as a rookie? I'm still skeptical of the big role, but I certainly think they're going to try to utilize his talents.
Have you noticed anything from him thus far on the blocking front? I know it's only been a couple of days in pads, but has there been anything one way or the other that stood out to you there?
No, and not. I can't lie and say I have really noticed it. Yeah, I don't have a great evaluation there. And of course, today we're not gonna get that again because they're in shorts. But yeah, there's a guy. There's an interesting guy when you talk about like who's playing the preseason games. You know, how much is like I'd play him a lot. You know, yeah. I mean, you could argue and say, man, I don't know, he could be a key guy, but I mean, like, you got to get some of these, especially these young football players, ready to play football by playing football, right?
Yeah. Well, we talked about that with Caleb Farley earlier, too. Like, he's, by most accounts, has been pretty impressive so far during training camp. He's had some injury problems, so maybe being cautious is the way to go. But, like, at some point, you also want him to play football, and you want him to be able to handle contact, and you want to see how he can tackle in the open field. Like, things that you can't really figure out in a training camp practice, I'm interested to see if they do that with a guy like Caleb Farley in the preseason.
Yeah, absolutely. So so they're doing one-on-ones now, which is like the tackling drill where the receiver and DB start out running away from each other, right, and then they come at each other. And so typically, you know, you got some space and you're faking someone out, and Mason Kinsey just had a good move. So Burks and Hooker went one-on-one, and Burks just plowed right into him. Just like, you know what, how about I just run through you? That will work for me. So, and the thing is, in real football, if he has that kind of momentum going, it probably will work for him more times than it won't.
He is he's a big dude. You know, Rob Moore, Titans wide receivers coach, was talking about him this morning as well. That combination of size and speed. It's a rare combination that even in this league, it doesn't come across too often. So I'm interested to see how the Titans utilize that. Joseph, have yourself a fun day at Titans training camp.
Will do. I'll come with many takes tomorrow morning.
We hope that you do. Joe Rexroad will join us again tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. here on Robbie and Rexroad. That does it for us today. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace are coming up next live from Titans training camp. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.